Okay, let's get started. All right, everybody, welcome back. Hope you had a good Shavuot. I was away in New Jersey, New York. Now I'm back. Now I'm going to make a change from the scheduled topic for today. The scheduled topic was the camel, the hair, and the hyrax. Then I'm going to switch that to kashrut controversies with fish. And the reason why I decided to switch it is that we're going to get, I got news just now that we're getting a very unexpected and special delivery to the museum, which is scheduled to come in about half an hour. And this is a really unique, something very unique, very exciting. I'm not going to tell you yet what it is, but obviously it has something to do with fish. And because that's going to happen live during this session, I decided to switch the topic to that, and we'll start off with some background. Okay, so before we get into kashrut specifically of fish, we're going to talk about kashrut in general. Wait, hold on one second. Guys, can you just go down there? Okay, kashrut in general. Now we're doing this here from our Hall of Kashrut here at the museum, Hall of Kosher Classification, to give it its full name. Going to have to ask you, sorry, hold that. This is about the special delivery. Hold on, I have to take this call. Hi, I've been very good.
You have sound? I lost the sound. Okay.
I saw.
Sorry, I'm back. Sorry about that. Hopefully, there won't be any more disruptions. All right, so kashrut. This is our Hall of Kashrut. And the thing about kashrut is, it's, you know, the question is how you define mitzvot. We know that mitzvot are generally divided into chukim and mishpatim. Right? A mishpat is the kind of mitzvah you can easily understand. A chok is a mitzvah that we can't understand the reason for. So, what's kashrut? Is it a chok or is it a mishpat? So I'm just gonna have to mute everyone because how do I do that? Judy, can you mute yourself because the audio is interfering? Thank you. All right. So people normally think that kashrut is a chok, something that we can't understand the reason for. Alternately, some people over the generations have tried to give reasons for kashrut, and these reasons tend to be a bit far-fetched, or they don't hold water when you apply them to different types of creatures. But in fact, I think the best way to understand it is realizing that kashrut has two layers of reasons. There's one reason, or one layer of kashrut is just the idea of kashrut. There's some things you can eat and some things you can't eat. Without getting into specifics of which is in each category, but just the idea that you're not able to eat whatever you want. And then the secondary layer of kashrut would be, given that there is such a concept of kashrut, which things are we going to decide are kosher and which things should fall into the non-kosher category? And once you divide it that way, it becomes much more straightforward. Because as for the reason why there should be such a thing as kashrut, well, the Torah says so explicitly. It's right at the end of Parashat Shemini, where after having given all the laws of kashrut, the Torah says what it's about kedusha, it's about sanctity. What does that have to do with kashrut? Because sanctity means designation, means being set apart. And the Jewish people, God says, are separated from the nations, right? So what does that have to do with eating some animals and not others? So you could say that it's talking about you have to eat, you know, some animals and not others. But actually, I think the focus is on the Jewish people itself, that the Jewish people have a distinct cultural identity, right? We are separated out from other nations, have a distinct cultural identity. And in terms of food, that means that you can't eat any animal you want. You can only eat certain types of animals, animals that are on the Jewish menu. They're on the kosher menu. And then when it comes to talking about, well, which animals should be considered kosher and not kosher, then you'll have all different explanations, right? So with mammals, there'll be one set of explanations, right, as to why certain mammals are not kosher. And then with insects, Right, there'll be a different explanation as to why certain insects are kosher. There's our kosher insect section. And then with birds, right, there'll be explanations as to which birds are not kosher and kosher. And then finally, we get to fish, which is what I want to focus on for today. Now, with fish, what are the criteria for a kosher fish? The criteria are fins and scales. Now, in general, that has some interesting ramifications, but first we'll talk about, what's a classic kosher fish. So a classic kosher fish would be, say, a gefilte fish, right? It's round and white, has a piece of carrot on its head. And here at the Biblical Museum of Natural History, we have some real live gefilte fish. Zoom in on them there. There we go. Round and white and a piece of carrot on the head. Real live gefilte fish. Now, these are an exotic variety of goldfish called red-capped oranders from China. And
Red
obviously, as soon
cap.
as I saw these were available, I instantly thought gefilte fish, what a great thing to have on exhibit in the museum. Yeah, look at that one. He's got a great big piece of carrot on his head there. Right, so they are a type of goldfish. Let's zoom back out the camera. There we go. They are a type of goldfish, and like all goldfish, they are kosher. They have fins and scales. A classic example of a non-kosher fish would be a shark. Right, here we have a real live baby shark that I got in South Africa, except for the googly eyes. Right, the googly eyes are not real. But apart from the googly eyes, the rest of it is real. And why is it, excuse me, why is it not kosher? Because it doesn't have any scales. See, this one's been varnished. Here's another type of shark called a bamboo shark. And it's not been varnished. And I can feel it. It feels like sandpaper. Right, so it's not scales. And therefore, this fish is not kosher. And in contrast, up here hanging above my head, what are those? Those are piranhas. Right, piranhas. Unfortunately, originally they were just mounted at much lower down, and people took them and dropped them and smashed them, and their teeth got broken out. So now they don't have their razor-sharp teeth that they're famous for. We hung them out of reach. But piranhas are kosher fish, right? They have fins, they have scales. We have served them at our exotic kosher banquets. Now, the question with that, obviously, is that, sorry, somebody doesn't have their microphone on mute and it's interfering. If your microphone's not on mute, please can you mute it? Thanks. Now, the question with that is that with mammals, certainly there's a principle that non-kosher and that predatory animals, predatory mammals are not kosher. Right, with birds also, definitely a very clear principle. The Gemara says it explicitly that predatory birds are not kosher. So how could piranhas be kosher? And not the only predatory fish that's kosher, barracudas, right? Barracudas, voracious fish, which can attack people, right? They're also kosher. So what's the answer to that? So I think you could answer, I've never seen it discussed by anyone, but what seems to me is, well, first of all, essentially every fish is a predator. What else are they going to eat? There's not much plant life in the ocean, right? What's a tuna? I once found out that my kids when they were little, they thought that a tuna was a little round fish that nibbles the grass. No, a tuna is a gigantic, voracious predator. And most fish basically just eat fish that are smaller than them. But I think another part of the answer may be that what are fish predatory of? They just eat other fish. It's not like mammalian predators, right, which eat mammals. Right, or bird predators also eat mammals. They're basically essentially just eating fish, so that may not be considered, predatory from a Torah perspective. But between those two answers, I think somewhere lies the truth about why predatory fish can be kosher as long as they have fins and scales. Now, there's another interesting thing mentioned in the Gemara. The Gemara says that the sea is the opposite of the land. On land, a donkey is treif. And an ox is kosher. And in sea, it's the opposite. The ox is treif and the donkey is kosher. And what does that mean? What it means is that there's a fish that's called the donkey of the sea, and there's a fish that's called the ox of the sea. Right? And those are the reverse of their terrestrial counterparts. So what's the donkey of the sea? Not entirely clear. It seems to be a cod. Right? A cod in ancient languages was known as a sea donkey. And yet, unlike the donkey, which is not kosher, a cod is kosher. Right? And what about the ox of the sea? So the ox of the sea, the ox fish, would appear to be this fish behind me here. This is what's known in English as a ray, in the ray family, like manta rays. Right? And some of them have these two what appear to be horns, like an ox. Now, they're not actually horns. They're actually just, you know, flaps of skin that stick out. Because they look like horns. So these fish, these rays are variously known as devil fish or sometimes ox fish. Right? But unlike the ox, which is kosher, a manta ray is not kosher because it does not have any scales. Okay, so it all seems, you know, fairly straightforward so far, fins and scales. But then we get to some more complicated specimens. Now, just behind me, behind me here, what's this fish below the manta ray? Anyone recognize that fish? It's quite long. He has a shovely kind of snout, and he has these long barbels sticking out from underneath him. Anyone know what that is?
Sturgeon.
It is a sturgeon.
Sturgeon.
Correct, sturgeon. Now, until very recently, we had actually a live sturgeon on the exhibit in the museum. We got him just a few weeks ago. Normally, sturgeon are actually never available. But there was, I think the source of them was that there's a sturgeon farm in the Golan, kind of a tourist attraction that unfortunately, with the war going on, it's not getting many tourists. And they decided to sell off their stock. So we got some live baby sturgeon. Unfortunately, sturgeon need to be in very, very, very cold water. And we have a chiller for them in the aquarium, but it's been very hot in Israel lately. And somehow over last Shabbos, the electricity went somehow, the chiller went, and the water got to quite warm, and the sturgeon died. Unfortunately, here we've stuck him in the freezer. Let this fellow out. Ah. Poor little fella. Here he is. Our little sturgeon. Now, sturgeons, of course, are famous for being the source of caviar, one of the most expensive delicacies in the world. And the question is, are sturgeons kosher? Is caviar kosher? So let's take a look at his scales. I'm trying to get the camera to focus on it. Maybe if I move out of sight, the camera will focus. Let's get the ice off him. So as you can see, he has scales, right? You see those scales all the way down his body? Those white scales, right? He has that whole row of scales there, scales on top also. But the question is, do those scales count halachically as scales, right? And the bigger one here, this is a model. Right? It also has the scales here. These scales are different from regular fish scales. Regular fish scales, you know, that you can pull them off without too much difficulty, right? They're only very lightly attached in the skin at one end, and they're quite easy to remove by hand. But sturgeon scales are very, you know, deeply embedded all around in the fish. So do those count as scales or not? So the first authority to weigh on in this was the Noda B'Yehuda. Noda B'Yehuda, a great halachic authority from a little while ago. Can't remember the year offhand. If somebody wants to type in the chat box, anyone knows about Noda B'Yehuda, so we can get an exact fix for when he was born and died. And the Noda B'Yehuda said that he discusses sturgeon. And he says, you know, this whole requirement that fish scales have to be detachable, right? He says, where does it come from? It's not mentioned anywhere in the Torah. It's not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara. Right? Now, there we go. Somebody writing the date. 1720 to 1793. That's an Oda B'Yehuda. Okay. So, 300 years ago. Now, he said, this requirement, where does it come from? So, Ramban mentions it. Right? Ramban says that the fish scales must be easily detachable. But the Noda says, where did Ramban get this from? Right? There's no clear earlier source for it. He says, okay, it's Ramban, right? Ramban is a very prestigious rabbinic authority, and that view has been widely accepted. So we're going to accept it also. But he says, because there's no clear source for it, therefore we're going to accept it very flexibly, right? That yes, the skin has to be detachable, but it doesn't matter how you detach it. As long as there's some way of detaching it, that's fine. So he did some practical experimentation. he got a sturgeon, and he found that if he uses a knife, right, that he was able to get the scales off. As soon as this one defrosts, maybe I'll do the same experiment. All right. And he said that he also tried soaking it in lye for a while, for a couple of hours. And after soaking it in, earlier. He found that the scales could come off even with a knife, with a tool. Right? Even though they didn't easily pull off by hand, but he was able to get them off with a knife. And then he says after soaking it in lye, in a solution of lye for a few hours, he was able to just pull the scales off even by hand. Right? So he says that is detachable enough for sturgeon to be considered kosher. Now, there was another rabbi of the era who got very upset with the Noda Yehuda. Right? And had a big argument. And he was saying, no, sturgeon's not kosher, it is kosher, not kosher. Right? And then the Noda Yehuda passed away. And after the Noda Yehuda passed away, this other rabbi says that before the Noda Yehuda passed away, he wrote him a letter retracting his view. Now, the Noda Yehuda's son said, no way. My father did not retract his view. He was very, very firm about it. And if he would have retracted it, he would have told me or somebody else, not you. So he accused this other rabbi of forging the letter. And it seems that he was correct. The supposed letter of retraction was forged. Nevertheless, you know, on the one hand, it was still considered to be quite a radical view that sturgeon is kosher. Now, in the list of kosher fish published by the Gudas Rabbanim in the early 20th century, the Gudas Rabbanim, I don't think that exists anymore. It was like the precursor to the Agudas Yisrael. Right, early rabbinic authority in the U.S., early 20th century, they published a list of kosher fish, and sturgeon was on that list. But nowadays, I think it would be very hard to get anyone to say that sturgeon is kosher. When we do our exotic banquets, so we want to know about which fish are, we want to be able to serve as many kosher things as possible, so we don't serve sturgeon, but we want to serve caviar. So what we serve is this. Marquis caviar, complete with an OU. Now, if sturgeon is not kosher, so how can caviar be kosher? The answer is this caviar is not from a sturgeon. It is from, if you can zoom in there, a bowfin. A bowfin is another kind of fish that it's eggs. Caviar literally just means, refers to fish eggs, right? So the term is usually used for sturgeon, which are the fish eggs that are the most delicious, most expensive. But the caviar can be other fish eggs. So this particular caviar that comes with an OU is from a fish called a bowfin, which is tasted delicious. I have no idea if it tastes the same as real caviar or not, because I haven't tasted sturgeon caviar. But that is the story with the sturgeon. Now, next, we turn... Oh, my gosh, this defrosting sturgeon is, like, leaking fluids all over my computer sound here. Okay. All right. Now, next, we turn to the fish that you must have noticed in the wall behind me, which is the swordfish. And again, the reason why I switched the topic from camel hairs and hyrax to swordfish is because we have, I got a call a little while ago. We've been trying to get a swordfish for a while for our forthcoming Feast of Legends from the Sea. I just got a call today that finally, our chef, Chef Moshe Basson from the famous Eucalyptus restaurant in Jerusalem, he finally managed to locate a swordfish. He's gone to pick it up and he's on the way over to the museum right now. So I'm very, very excited about that. And I wanted to, because it's a very special event, you want to see it live. Hopefully, assuming he's not stuck in traffic, right? Hopefully we'll be able to watch that, experience that live. This swordfish we have here in the wall is just a model. Now, the question is swordfish kosher? Right? So everyone knows, no, swordfish isn't kosher. Right? Conservative Jews eat swordfish, but Orthodox Jews do not accept swordfish as a kosher fish. And so that's what everyone tells me. And yet the truth is a lot more complicated than that. Right. Certainly, Jews from many European communities, especially Italy, they'll tell you that swordfish is kosher. If you look in this list I mentioned of the Gudas Harabonim, the beginning of the 20th century, right after sturgeon, right, it says swordfish. It lists swordfish as a kosher fish. So what's going on? Now, does it have any scales? Okay, this is just a model. Right, but even if you look at a big live swordfish, you will not see any scales. So what's going on with that? So, in the one of the Achronim, one of the late rabbinic authorities to discuss swordfish, he talks about swordfish being kosher, And he says that even though you don't see scales, but they are born with scales and they lose them later in life. And in that, he's basing himself on the Gemara. The Gemara talks about a fish called the Asaphius, which it says that even though it doesn't have scales, you don't see any scales on it, but it's born with scales and it loses them later in life. Right? And if a fish has scales at any point in its life, it's kosher, even if you're eating it at the stage when it doesn't have scales. And the reason for that law actually is very quite straightforward, because if you're going to say that a fish has to have scales its entire life, and if it loses them and it's not kosher, then how could you ever eat a fish? Right? If you eat a fish, you see it has scales, but how can you know it's always going to have those scales? Maybe it'll lose them someday. Right? So to be kosher, right, a fish just needs scales at any point in its life. And the Gemara talking about the Achzifias and the later Acharonim, right, say that that is a situation with swordfish. Now, first the question is, how do we know that they're actually talking about this fish over here, the swordfish? Maybe they're talking about some different kind of fish. Now, there's other fishes that have long pointy things. There's marlin, there's spearfish, there's sailfish. How do we know they're talking about a swordfish? So the answer is, firstly, the Acharonim who talk about it, they call it the Dag Cherev. Now Cherev, sword, right, that's a very specific type of weapon. How do you use a sword? You cut with it, right? You slice, as opposed to a spear, right, which you throw and impale. Now, the bill of a swordfish, let's see if we can kind of get the camera angle right here. All right, the bill of the swordfish is flat. You see that? In cross-section, it's flat. Whereas all these other fish, their bill is circular in cross-section. All right, so the only one that's a swordfish is this. And it's not like there's different types or similar types. All right, the swordfish is unique in its class. It's the only fish which has a sword. Okay, and Dag Cherev, right? And in fact, Achzaphias, the fish that the Gemara talks about, is apparently the same fish, because Ziphias is Greek for the sword. That's the Latin name of this fish, Ziphias, right? Xiphias. Right? So Ziphias that the Gemara speaks about is actually the fish that loses its, that has scales when it's young and then loses them, also seems to be talking about the same fish that the Acharonim explicitly call Dag Cherev. Plus, the other proof that they're talking about swordfish and not, you know, marlin or anything else is that, you know, they clearly wanted you to only eat a kosher fish, right? This fish and not the fish that's not kosher. And swordfish, especially in the Mediterranean, right, is by far the most commonly caught of all the fish, all the billfish, right? All the fish with the long pointy thing. Right? They were hunted so much that now there's not so many of them left. But until recent times, swordfish was much more common than everything else. So if you've got a fish that's known as the swordfish and that, you know, everyone around you is eating, there's no way that you would say that Dag Cherev is kosher if you were not talking about this, right? If this fish was not kosher and really Dag Cherev meant, you know, something else, there's no way you'd say that without saying, oh, and we're not talking about the thing that everyone else eats, and that is, and that's the most common fish, and which also is called the swordfish, right? There's no way that would happen. All right, so clearly when they're talking about the fish with the sword, and they say how it's commonly eaten, and even though it doesn't have scales, it's kosher because it has scales when it's young, there's not even a shadow of doubt that they're talking about the swordfish. Okay, so what about this idea they say about it? It says it's born with scales and it loses them when it comes out of the water. So this is actually a bit of a riddle, which I don't have a 100% clear answer for. If you... it's very, very hard to find a small swordfish. Very, very hard. I mean, when they're born, they're tiny. Right? It's illegal to fish them below a certain size. But it's very, very hard to find baby swordfish. So I was at the Natural History Museum in Berlin a couple of years ago. I asked them if they had a baby swordfish, and they did. They had a preserved one. I went behind the scenes, and I got to see it. And it was, when they're born, they're like even perhaps even microscopic. But this one was about yay big, and it had scales. I could see clearly three rows of scales. And there's also diagrams you can find in ichthyological journals, which shows these three rows of scales. Now, these scales that are shown and that I saw were kind of sturgeon-like scales. This guy's now defrosting a bit more. All right, they were kind of sturgeon-like scales. And they were hard, pointy scales that are quite, you know, deeply embedded in the skin. Right, and wouldn't seem to be, you know, any superior to sturgeon scales. However, when you and these scales, as the fish grows, it seems that they become embedded. Like the flesh grows thicker and thicker, and these scales become embedded in the flesh, such that when you pull an adult swordfish out of the water, you can't see these scales usually. At that point, they've really become deeply embedded in the flesh. But I'm not positive those are the scales that Gamera was talking about, because people have told me, my friend and colleague, Rabbi Dr. Ari Zavitarsky, has told me that he's been in the presence of many examinations of swordfish, including with Rav Machbud and others, and you find the other regular scales. Now, I was just speaking to Ari Zavitarsky earlier, and he said, you know, it's not exactly clear what's going on, because those are not the scales, those do not seem to be the scales that the juveniles have. And in zoological literature, there's no mention, right? The zoological literature says swordfish do not have scales, except for the, you know, the juveniles, which have these three rows of hard scales that get embedded in the skin. But you do seem to find scales. So they're hard to find. They are hard to find. They're not all over the fish. But when you examine a swordfish, apparently, you do find scales. And I've seen video also of people examining swordfish and finding scales. And based on that, you know, Rav Machbud and others too, instead of Soloveitchik and others, have said that swordfish, you find scales. It's a kosher fish. And this is why, you know, again, the Jews of Italy were eating swordfish, and this is why the Agudas Rabbanim until early 20th century was eating swordfish. Now, what happened was, so how did it happen that swordfish became widely considered non-kosher? So Moshe Tendler, he was convinced that swordfish is not kosher, and he embarked on a campaign to convince people that swordfish is not kosher. And he was very successful at it, and he said to people, you know, conservative Jews say that swordfish is kosher. Are you a conservative Jew? But people didn't want to identify as a conservative Jew, so they said, no, we're not going to eat swordfish, and that's how swordfish, you know, effectively got removed from the market. Now, at the end of the day, you know, there is this question, you know, the only type of scales mentioned in the zoological literature are these small, very spiky, embedded scales. It's just arrived, it's in the parking lot, very exciting. And so, you know, on what basis is the swordfish kosher? Is it these scales that it has as a juvenile, which are not regular kosher scales, but which the Noda Vihuda says are like the sturgeon scales, right? With sturgeon says that it doesn't matter if they're embedded. As long as, you know, you get them out with a knife or soaking it in lye, that's fine, because there's no clear requirement because the scales can be detachable. So is it on that basis that the swordfish is permitted? Or is it because it has regular scales that you can actually find on it and detach? If it's the latter, then, you know, well, if these scales are not from the swordfish, you know, what's going on with them? Has it maybe got stuck to it from another fish? But on the other hand, that doesn't seem to make sense, that, you know, that a bunch of swordfish have been examined. You know, Dr. Zavitarsky told me that every time he's examined them, eventually you do find scales, because they all have gotten stuck there from another fish. You know, it's not entirely clear, you know, and it's indisputable that Jews have been eating swordfish for many, many, many centuries. And we don't want to say that Jews have been eating not kosher. So, you know, between these three things, the fact that baby swordfish are clearly seen to have scales, albeit, you know, deep embedded ones, adult swordfish, Abby, it's here in the parking lot. He's downstairs. Bring a fish up. You know, adults, you do find scales. Right? Any person upstairs, they examine them, they find scales. Right? And the fact that Jews have been eating it for hundreds of years. So there would certainly, I'd say, be sufficient basis for someone to eat swordfish. But at the same time, the fact that there have been authorities who say it's not kosher, right? And the fact that the zoology books, you know, these scales, these regular detachable fish scales that you can find in larger ones, according to the zoological literature, there's no mention of them. It's not even awareness that they exist. So I can certainly understand somebody being strict and not eating it. So I've always wanted to actually get a close look at an actual swordfish and see if we can actually just see what it looks like. And
this is tough.
He's texting me that he's outside. So we're getting swordfish brought up today. Now, actually, somebody commented the Moroccan communities, and some communities they eat swordfish and others they don't. Right? So, you know, it is a complicated issue, but there's certainly no question that Jews have eaten swordfish in many communities, right, for many hundreds of years. It seems almost certain that this is the fish that Gemara is speaking about. They are born with three rows of hard scales, which according to the Noda Yehuda would seem to qualify as sufficient. And in many, many examinations of larger swordfish, you can find scales. All right, so you can see how we can kind of go both ways in this. As our fish is coming up. Oh, here's another thing though. If you accept swordfish as being kosher, can you go to a supermarket and buy a swordfish? So it's a bit more complicated, but then it's certainly a problematic because when you see, generally swordfish are gigantic, right? They can get to be huge. This one coming up is a small one, but they can get to be like, 12 feet long. So in supermarkets, right, they're generally not selling a whole swordfish. They're selling a steak, a slice, or, part of a cross section, right? So how do you know what it is? How do you know it's really swordfish? Right, just because it has a label on it saying swordfish, could be anything. Apparently, they sometimes sell shark as being swordfish because shark is much easier to catch. Now, if it's a different type of fish, you don't need to only buy fish in a kosher store. You can buy fish in a non-kosher supermarket. Right? It doesn't matter because in a different kind of fish, even if it's only a steak, a slice of fish, but you can see the scales. Right? So even if it's not the salmon that they claim it is, right? But you can see the scales. So it doesn't matter. As long as a fish has scales, it's kosher. Now, it says, separate topic, if it has scales, you can assume it has fins. All right, so anything with scales is fine. With swordfish, it doesn't have scales, usually, that you can see. The only way you can eat it is because you know it's from a swordfish. But if you're not seeing the whole fish, how do you know it's from a swordfish? Could be shark, could be anything. All right, so even if you do hold that swordfish is kosher, it would be problematic to buy a swordfish steak in the supermarket. Where is he? What, he's not there? He says he's in the parking lot. Did he go to the old museum?
Oh boy!
That's only around the corner. Hold on. Where did he say he's in the parking lot?
Maybe he went around the wrong side.
Maybe he's on the far side? He's been to the building before. Sorry, chef has gotten lost. Now, there may be a way around that. In that it does seem that swordfish have a very particular pattern to their muscles, to their flesh. That in a cross section of swordfish, they have, actually, it's like a spiral, these walls, WHORLS, which appears to be absolutely unique to swordfish. And I have spoken to some halakhic authorities who are willing to accept that as identifying swordfish, because once you know what to look for, it's really so unique, no other fish has that. But others understandably would be reticent. We have served swordfish once before in the feast at the museum. Oh, no, twice before. Did it once at the museum dinner several years ago in Israel. We did it once in LA a couple of years ago. But certainly in general, it's very, very hard to find. Right? Very hard fish. I mean, in general, our events are extremely difficult to produce. We have different menus in the events that we do. Sometimes we have a biblical menu, animals and birds from Tanakh. Sometimes we have our exotic non-biblical menu, right? And that's the one we did last year, where we served Asian water buffalo and pheasant and peacock and things like that. And then we have our aquatic menu, Legends from the Sea. If you're here, I'm taking the wagon down. If I go to the window, will I see it? Let's go to the window. Aha.
Tanya, this is happening live. That is Chef Moshe Basson from the famous Eucalyptus restaurant in Jerusalem. He is an internationally famous chef. He's known as the biblical chef for restoring old fish traditions. Really hope he kept the air conditioning on in his car. Yeah. Originally, he actually asked me if I could pick up the swordfish, but I transported the swordfish last time for our event. And in our car, and my wife was very upset. She said she couldn't go into the car for 6 months afterwards, no matter how much I tried to get the smell out. So this time I asked him if he would go and pick it up. All right, so this swordfish will hopefully be on the menu for this year's Feast of Legends from the Sea, which is taking place 2 days before Sukkot. And usually we keep the menu a little bit of a secret because we're never sure what we're going to be able to get. Often the animals we want to get are very difficult to get hold of, and it's hit or miss, but you guys, I guess, have already gotten a sneak preview that we did manage to obtain a swordfish, And we're also going to be serving some other very unusual kosher fish, including one that we've never served before, which I'm going to keep a secret, as well as certain warm-blooded creatures. There are also certain flacic creatures that come under the Legends from the Sea heading. That's obviously a bit of a mystery. How can something flacic be from the sea? Right? Flacic is mammals or birds, right? And they're land creatures. So that's something which I'm going to try and involve a certain creative interpretation. But that's, we're going to keep that one close to my chest for now. Now, as we're waiting for this swordfish to come upstairs, meanwhile, do we have any questions before we do the exam? Scroll down to the chat. Somebody asked, what if a kosher fish feeds on non-kosher fish? Well, that would be fine. I mean, there's kosher birds and animals that feed non-kosher things. Chicken will eat mice sometimes. Right? And certainly there's kosher birds that will eat insects. So that doesn't matter. All right, so it doesn't matter if a kosher fish feeds on non-kosher fish. It doesn't make the kosher fish non-kosher. Question would be if you open up the kosher fish and you find a non-kosher fish in its stomach. So that would be a different question. Any other questions meanwhile? While we wait for
Hi, my grandmother came from Ireland, and the Masura was in Ireland that tuna fish lose their scales, and it was always in our family. We did not eat tuna fish because they lost. We don't eat tuna because the Masura in Ireland was that because they lose their scales,
it's not to eat tuna.
And the women kept it. You know, the guys who got married in the family, their wives existed. They tuna was fine, but I don't have tuna in the house, and many of my cousins don't also from that family.
That is very, very interesting. Now, could you do me a favor? Could you possibly email that to me? Because I want to keep that piece of information in hand and look into it. You can email me at zoorabbi@zootorah.com.
Sharon. So
who's
good.
Speaking? Oh, it's Sharon speaking?
Yeah. Sharon Aumann.
Oh, hi, Sharon.
Hi.
I didn't know your family was from China. Awesome.
My grandmother was from Ireland. She was brought up in Ireland. Very from family. Her brothers went to Slobodka from Ireland. Very, very from. And they were very, very machmir. No tuna fish.
Here we go. Hey, guys. Whoa.
Am I here?
Yeah, Abby, you're getting the Khatpami gloves. Abby, you want to take over with the filming?
Doug? Yes. Is the camera for the first?
Sorry?
Yeah, sure.
Do you want me to take pictures or should I?
Yeah.
I'll follow.
You also zoom in and out with the camera. Wow, this was the smaller one of the two they
bought. Smaller.
Not fit in our freezer, Abby?
I'll make it.
We have a big long freezer upstairs storing unusual items.
Plus, that was the first item.
Wait, you've got the light behind him. Is that no good?
I like the light.
Come
on, Rabbi T. Yeah, Rabbi, you want to get
it? Let's go to the background of the museum.
Sure.
Ellie, can you have on this side to get the museum name behind yourself?
Yeah. You could even, like, pop it as nothing.
Okay, down on the table. Now, I mean, where's that plastic knife?
Should be there.
There we go.
I just want to see if you can find any skills. Let's see. They're saying that sometimes it's possible to find a skill, sometimes it's not.
When we wash it, they said, don't wash it, you can find the skills. The thing that it is ice. Oh, the scales must be ice.
Scales, if they're attached to the they're attached at the front end, so if you can move the knife in the opposite direction of the head where you can sometimes find them. It's nice. He watched it with a jet. Oh, there we go. There it is.
Yeah. I think you will think of everything like a
square. Wow.
So you can see the contrast. Yeah, because it's clear you can see.
Yeah. I mean, have a steel the metal knife?
I think you found it.
Well, I think you found it, yeah. Oh. That.
There's good lighting, but I'll ask for that.
Oh, oops.
I can rip it. Metal knife.
Yeah. Now I already need to put that
machine around. The people are sticking in that.
There we go. There we go. If you can see that on the camera, not either. I'm not going to see this on the camera. It's going to focus. Sorry, you can't focus on it, but I did just scrape off a scale here. Yeah, Abby, can you see if the camera will can focus on it?
There's some focus,
it.
Yeah.
I'm pointing to it there. That's the scale that I scraped off it.
It's visible.
I'm feeling it.
I'm just going to steal that.
And you can see the knife because cameras on into it. Where was it? That's another one. Thanks.
Can I disconnect it or do I need it on the table?
No, you can't disconnect it because it's connecting to the Zoom.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Like finding the skills.
Found that one. Looks a bit earlier. That's
the only one I've
found so far.
Where's the microscope slide? Good
So we recommend that we use for the injections.
Have you ever bought it?
I don't know where that would be kept.
No, it's not advice.
It's a scale.
Here we go. We have another scale.
Oh, here, you want to? Can you bring it over to the camera so we can see it up close?
This one's pretty good. All.
Zoom in on it. See it there?
I'm trying to get focus.
Abby.
There we go.
Piece of clean paper from the printer we can put these scales down on. It's hard to make it out against.
I'm going to bring the camera around that way to see it.
We can see it.
Another one?
You probably can see it actually very clearly.
There we go. Two scales. Three scales. Now the scales on the tail here is partly, it's basically got scales on their tail. So it's scales on the tail, that's from somewhere elsewhere.
Scales that is put down to the ice, so.
Yeah. I'm saying these fell off on the ice, but maybe that was a different fish.
Are you thinking scale on the ice? So the scales are translucent.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed this very unexpected live presentation in which we successfully find a few scales, find a few swordfish scales. As I said, there's still a question of what exactly these are from. They somehow come from another fish, become attached to it. It doesn't seem likely, again, because you always, every time it's swordfish inspected, you find a few scales in it. And that's when those go down and they'll say that it's kosher. But still, if somebody wants to be stringent and say, how did they get there? Zoology doesn't really acknowledge them. Maybe they're from another fish that got stuck to it.
I guess the person could be splinter than those grounds. I'm not going to. Thank you for joining me for this class. I'm not going to sign off yet because you can watch watch what happens from here. What should we do now? Are we going to put it in the freezer upstairs?
Vega, please mute.
Thank you, you too. You can say hello to all our viewers around the world.
No, just more tablecloth and rubber bands.
So Baba, you are really lucky to do what you love and to have the chance to predict your vision and living.
Thank you. I think let's have a second ask you to see the picture of me. Thank you for putting that aside. Here on the other side.
There's some additional layers also. That's exciting.
It's in this guy upstairs. Don't even have to unwrap it.
What would be the
way
to
this
again?
Oh,
Minimize the amount of contact with the air.
Okay, I'm going to sign off here. Hope you enjoyed this very unusual interactive hands-on experience, and I'll see you next week.